Welcome, everybody. This is the Small Council, where we discuss anything and everything, A Song of Ice and Fire, The Miniatures Game by Simon. A quick rundown of the show. We do it live so that you guys can kind of jump on and we can, you know, let you, you know, talk to us or some of our guests, you know, kind of give your input. So if that interests you, definitely call in, and then towards the end of the show, we'll try to take a couple callers. But tonight's show, we have on a couple guests. We will be talking about the tournament that just happened in Indianapolis at Family Time Games. I do have to apologize. I am currently sick, so I'm going to kind of get through this intro for you guys and then go over my list, and then kind of let everyone else take away the show for tonight. But so we have with us every host. So we have Brett, Justin, Jose, myself, Chris, and then we also have our guests, which is John Hurley and Craig, who took second and third place at the tournament. Thank you guys for coming on.
Well, yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm going to kind of just really quickly jump into my list and what I faced, just kind of get out of the way just before my voice starts to go away again. So I took two lists, but I only end up actually using one of them. It was my usual Stark list. It was Umber Great Axes with Blackfish Commander, another Umber Great Axe with Hodor, Berserkers with Rickon and Osha, another Berserker, and normally I'd have a Sword and Sword Captain, but in this one, just to kind of deal with some other Stark players, I threw in Mira instead. Obviously, I got Summer and Shaggy Dog for free. And then I took Eddard and Catelyn as my NCUs. Ended up facing Craig first round in Clash of Kings, and that was definitely a hard-fought, you know, battle. I think we ended it 9-10, if I'm not mistaken, Craig?
Yeah, that is correct.
So it was definitely back and forth. I thought from the get-go I was going to be done for because he had an all-cav list and he was able to grab all three objectives before I was able to claim any. But thankfully I was able to contest most of the game to kind of give myself, you know, a fighting chance. Next I played another Stark. So I played Craig, who was Stark's. And then I played my second game, which was Starks again. Remind me, guys, what was our second mission? I was kind of out that day.
Feast for Crows.
I was pretty sick. So, yes, Feast for Crows. So that one kind of was looking really bad for me. I lost two units right at the get-go, but that actually ended up kind of saving me because I was able to place the new corpse piles back near me, and I just kind of retreated back onto them, and then slowly just kind of took away with the points in the later rounds. And then last mission was that dance?
Dance with Dragon.
Yeah, dance. Yep. And we that one was a bloodbath. I ended up facing a good friend, Brett, one of Brett's really good friends too. And it was just, I think at the end of the game, we both had one unit with one guy left on it, and then another unit at half health. And, you know, it ended only the difference between a couple of victory points. So I ended up going 2-1, and I mean, it was definitely not an easy day. That, and, you know, I had just gotten sick a couple days prior, so it was kind of miserable in that sense. But overall, the day was super fun. go ahead, Justin.
So I ended up getting a fourth place, this is Justin, with neutrals, slightly ahead of Dave. My first game for Clash of Kings, I also faced an all cav list. It was Lannisters. Whew, that was a good game, but I got smoked. Bruce Bolton against Lannisters, he was able to keep me down the entire time. Every time I went to go activate Walder, when I didn't have priority, or I think one of them was when I had priority, he shut him down with Intrigue and Subterfuge, so that was a big hit. He randomly kept making me discard Calculated Cruelty, which is not fun, because that's the card that you want out there, especially against Cav. And then it ended, I think, 8 or 9 to 6, so it wasn't horrible, but it was very hard to fight that many Cav. Even if you do good enough to kill something, they're just charging you back right away. It was really rough. I was hoping Roos would do more, but he didn't really pull out for me. So the next game, I decided to go with Ramsey, and I'll talk about that actual list. The Roos list wasn't good enough for me to talk about. But the Ramsey list was Cutthroats with Ramsey and Theon, Bastards Girls with a Stormcrow Lieutenant, Flaidmen, some Stormcrow Mercenaries with a Lieutenant, and then a regular Cutthroats with Tycho and Peter. And honestly, this did do really well for me. The next game I played for Feast of Crows, I played against Starks, actually one of Craig's friends. A very fun player to play against. His Eddard commander decided to just sprint right up the field into my Cutthroats. And geez, did it take everything I had to keep those Cutthroats alive with one guy. I think he got 3 attacks in one round, and I don't know how my Cutthroats survived it. I had thrown weakened tokens, cards, blocking. It was a pain. But Ramsey was able to get in there and Cruel Methods at the beginning of the round to finish him off, which was very surprising for the other player. The third game, which was Dance, as we said, I played against another Stark player. I think that turning point was definitely my Bastard Girls were able to charge and kill Cutthroats turn one, which allowed them to get into the flank of Berserkers by surging forth at the beginning of round two. And so I was able to pop off Cruel Methods and one-shot the Berserkers, basically. No, I think it took a little bit more. Great John almost killed me, but Tycho came in to save the day. Super fun games. I very much enjoyed them. The team tournament was also a blast. And I'm glad to see that I can still pull out a couple wins with neutrals. It's not the easiest sometimes, but sometimes it goes well.
You're terrible.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah. So is it my turn?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Okay, so I was running Starks. I came in third. I was doing great until I ran into Craig in the third round, and we'll talk about that game a little bit because that was pretty epic. But I did run two lists. I brought two lists. I ran both of them. Coming into the event, I knew that Clash of Kings was going to be run. That's kind of a weird scenario these days. And so one list that I built specifically for that scenario, I ended up using it twice, though. And it's also built because I see a lot of panic effects out there these days with lots of people running Flaidmen and other sources of morale. Modification and panic, I decided I needed a list that could do a couple of things. One is in that scenario. I think that there's even though units come back, there's a real premium on being able to snag one of the objectives with your commander's unit and sit on it and just rack up 2 victory points per turn or per round. And you can just win that way if you're getting more victory points. And then the other thing that I wanted is because stuff can come back in immediately, if it hasn't activated, it can come in, it can activate, and if it's cavalry, it can charge and reach the middle of the board. So I wanted to build a list that combined a strong defensive center and some strong cavalry that could knock other people off the center. I went with a unit of Sworn Shields with Brendan Tully for the Stalwart, for the blocking, for the shield wall, for everything that they bring to the table. A unit of Sworn Swords with Rickon and Osha, because I think go down fighting is amazing. And also to get Shaggy Dog in there, 2 units of Tully Cav, And then as my NCUs, I had in that list, I had Eddard for the healing on those Sworn Shields mostly, Sansa and Arya. And the reasons for them are Arya, I use her first turn to get those Sworn Shields 4 inches further into the table because they're so slow. And then the very next thing that I'm going to do, probably if I need to, is either use the horse to advance them again and then march them on top of a token when I can, or I'm going to use Sansa and pull swift advance and get them on a token first turn and make them, you know, in a spot that forces my opponent to have to knock them off. So that's exactly what I did in the first game. It was against John Gilman. He ran Night's Watch. He had a Jon Snow unit of Snow Vets that he was going to try and do the same thing, snag an objective, sit on it. He had a unit of Sworn Brothers with Alistair Thorne, who can dish out Vicious, and also effectively the same order as a guard captain and a Lannister guard list. And also he had a naked unit of Vets and a naked unit of Sworn Brothers, and I don't remember his NCUs. But basically in that game, I did exactly what I wanted. I got the Sworn Shield onto an objective on one flank, and they were able to sit there and grind against a unit of Vets and a unit of an Alistair's unit and just take it. Tully Valor is an amazing card when you're sitting there with a 2-up defense save and automatically passing your panic test you don't care about much. And I was able to use the Tully Cav to kind of deal with his stuff in the middle to the point and grab that middle objective to the point where my opponent had to bring Jon Snow's unit off of his objective just to try and kill some stuff and keep me off of that center objective. He wasn't able to do it. I ended up winning 11-4. The next game was Feast for Crows, and I used that same list for a couple of reasons. One is because there are only two objectives. You do get a bonus for having your, at least to start, you do get a bonus for having your commander on an objective. And I was looking at it and saying, if those objectives are in corpse piles, I want Sworn Shields with Stalwart there. And I want Tully Cav nearby who can inspire them and make them as resistant to panic and morale effects as possible. My opponent was Cameron Wright. He's local here to Indy. He runs a Faith Militant list that's pretty nasty. I think he could tweak it in a couple of ways, but he runs 3 units of Warrior Sons, each with a Champion of the Faith, 2 units of Poor Fellows, High Sparrow, and Pycelle. And so that was a list I looked at and said, I don't want to really grind too long against them because they're going to win because their save is going to be improving. And, you know, they can dish out panic and vulnerable by expending faith tokens, and something's going to give eventually. So I just treated one of those side objectives the same way I treated an objective in Clash of Kings. I sold out to get my Sworn Shield onto it. I did kind of fake him out by doing a center deploy with my knights. Initially, I have more drops than him. I didn't tip my hand as to where I was going to deploy initially. After he had put everything down on the field, my last deploy was my Sworn Shields. I put them on the far left flank and sold out to get them on that objective. And then I kind of pulled my cavalry from that middle back to the left flank. I didn't charge in immediately, kind of played a delaying game, made him fearful of getting double charged by my cavalry. And so I was sitting there racking up 2 victory points, and he had 1 that he was getting with Poor Fellows on the other side because he didn't have a field commander. And eventually we kind of engaged, and I was able to focus on 1 unit of Warrior Sons, hit it with 2 units, got Shaggy Dog around the rear, and finished off the unit. That was the only unit that died the entire game, and I won 10-4. And then the last game was against Craig, which was the game in which I used my other list, which is a Robb Stark activation spam list with 3 dogs, 10 activations. Because the way I look at Dance with Dragons is one of the traps that you can fall into in that scenario is you get one of your important combat units on one of those objectives, and it's effectively out of the game unless your opponent wants to engage them, because you're limited to movement too. So I try to use my dogs to grab the objectives, freeing up my other units to do some work. For the most part, it was happening until things kind of took a bad turn at the end. But that list is Rob in a unit as my commander in a unit of Sworn Shield, Rick on an OSHA in Sworn Shield, Brandon Hodor in Great Axes, a unit of Tully Cav, all three dogs, and then Littlefinger, Cat, and Santa as my NCUs. Craig had three NCUs too, so that was kind of fun. I don't remember exactly what you ran, Craig. You had a unit of Tully Cav, Great Axes, Sworn Shields, and Outriders. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
It kind of was initially going to plan in that third game. I was able to get the two side objectives with my dogs. I purposefully overshot the objective on the left with my Tully Cav to let Grey Wind come in from behind and just pick it up and sit on it. And unfortunately, my Tully Cav ended up grinding against Craig's Outriders on that left flank for that entire game. And we're never able to finish him off. I don't think they ever failed a morale test. In the middle, Craig had a little bit of bad luck towards the beginning of the game. He was able to get off a sudden charge with his Great Axes against Rob's unit. I made a mistake. I advanced a little bit too far so that when he charged me, he actually ended up on the token and got the Vicious and Sundering on the charge with his Great Axes, which pretty much hurt because their initial charge is not their strong point. I was able to flank him and get him with my Great Axes, and then he was swinging with Executioner's Fury in the next, with his next attack, and he kind of whiffed. I think he got three misses that kind of hurt him and turned the fight in the middle in my favor. On the other flank, I was able to use sudden charge to use Rick on Anosha's unit to get a drop on his Tully Cavaliers and engage them. And I thought I had it all in the bag. I was sitting on all three objectives. I had wolves on two of them. One of them, I had Rob Stark unit holding it. And I think I had seven victory points. And if I just held those objectives for that one round, I would have won. And then my dice kind of went south in a couple of ways, and I failed some panic tests. Rob Stark's unit lost a round of combat, transferred the middle objective token to the Sworn Shields. They weren't going to give it up. And then my Rick on Anosha's unit had a really bad round where the Tully Cav, who weren't charging, obviously, attacked. I think they got six hits. I failed five defense saves, and then I failed the subsequent morale test that was a straight up test and lost all eight models in the unit. They died, gave up 2 points, and then it freed up the Cavaliers to chase after Shaggy Dog, who was weighed down by an objective token and couldn't run any more than 2 inches, and he was toast, and that was kind of the story of the game at the end. But it was a really fun game. It was back and forth, really solid game, and I would play Craig again any day. And that was kind of my tournament experience and the list that I ran. And Craig, on you.
So normally you don't start at the end, but since you did just cover the last game that I played, I'll start there just to make it simple. There's not a lot to add to it, really, other than, that panic test. He had all the objectives. He had me in the flank with Rickon and OSHA. Once he failed that, I think that was, like you said, two victory points. And so going into the next round, all I had freed up to fight was the Tully Cavaliers. I had first activation. I was able to take the swords to kill. Was it Summer?
It was Shaggy Dog.
They had the Tully Shield setup. Shaggy Dog had the objective. Tully Shield setup?
Yeah, you had the Tully. I had Summer in the flank of your Tully Shields, and you were able to use the swords to kill him off.
Right, and then
that's right.
And then following that, I think I played sudden charge and Winter is Coming to shut off Rob, so that my charge was not disorderly.
Right.
And I think in that round total, I probably scored 6 victory points.
Oh, yeah.
Off of all
yeah.
that and killed 3 units.
Well, you did. But, Rob's unit survived. You ended up killing, well, Summer died. Shaggy Dog died. Those were 2 points. You killed Rick Onanosha's unit, which got you 2 points. I wasn't able to do Run Child and retreat Rickon out of the unit. So that's a total of 4. And then you picked up the victory, the token in the middle. And yeah, you killed Shaggy Dog. And so you were able to grab the token on the side too. So yeah, it was crazy. It was really nuts.
Yeah, you had me. You did have me. On my list going into that, I think you touched on that already, but as I use it in other games, I'll go over it. I had a unit of Tully Sworn Shields, unit of Tully Cavaliers, a unit of Stark Outriders, and Uber Grid Axes with a Blackfish in it. Then for NCUs, I had Tycho, Eddard, and Sansa. And you decided to shut down Tycho on me, which there were quite a few times in the game. I think if only I had Tycho, I'd have a chance.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had Greywind parked on that objective, and Tycho was shut down the whole game.
Yeah, that was rough. But Eddard was able to keep my Outriders in the fight. You'd hit me.
Uh-huh.
I'd pass panic test, heal, and around we went. But that list is designed, obviously everyone knows about the Tully list, but it's designed to win a war of attrition, and that's eventually what happened. It took longer than I wanted it to, and a little bit rougher than I wanted it to be, but it did work out that way. Quite a bit of luck, too, for me. But back to the beginning of the first game, the Clash of Kings. When I designed a list for that, I thought, well, you need cavalry, obviously, because you're constantly charging after the objectives. So then I decided with the new 1.5 changes, they gave Outriders panic tokens, or Bushwhacked, to hand out panic tokens. So that seemed to me to be perfect to add to a Roos list. So I took Roos as my commander, 2 units of Outriders, a unit of Flayed Men, and a unit of Cavaliers, and my NCUs were Walder Frey and Sansa Stark. So basically, as Dave already said, I got on the objectives first. I played Dave first. I got on the objectives before he did and jumped out to an early lead. And I thought it was sizable enough. But Dave had other ideas. Normally, with a list like that, if you're running all cavalry in a Clash of Kings scenario, you're going to stall out in the middle of the game because they're going to hit you back. They're going to contest objectives because you've only got 2 ranks to begin with. But then you're going to die, and you actually want to because then you're charging back again. And usually, you've built up a lead high enough that your counter charge after you die is enough to win the game. But Dave put a unit of berserkers in my deployment zone and just waited for me to respond. It was rather uncomfortable there for a little while for me. He not only came back, I think I had him 5 or 6 to 1 at one point for victory points. And he ended up coming all the way back. We were tied at the end of the game on the last activation. So what I was able to do is I was able to deploy a unit of Flayed Men, and then I used Sudden Charge and Devastating Impact to charge. Wasn't it Brandon Hodor with Great Axes, Dave?
Yeah, it was like, I think they were at 7 wounds, and yeah, it was Great Axes with Brandon Hodor.
Okay, and then you made me disorderly charge.
Yep.
But I had played Sudden Charge. I had to kill him, otherwise I would have lost. So I played Sudden Charge so that I could hit him without being activated. His Great Axes had already activated, so I was able to hit him a second time, and he failed the exact number of saves he needed to fail. So it came down to the very last dice roll there with Dave.
The first attack, you attacked me, and I had a 2-up save because you charged over a wall, and I played Tully Valor, +1 save.
That's right.
So I had a 2-up save, and then I just had to hope for the best for the second attack, but just fell short just a little bit.
I think you had 4 wounds left, and you failed 4 rolls, I think is how it went.
Yeah.
But that was close. But second game, though, I think I played Sean, I think his name was. is Feast for Crows. I pulled my Tully list out again, the same list I use against John. And he used Howling Reed, so he did not have a field commander. So I kind of did what John did. I deployed my Great Axes with Tully in them on the left flank. Then I put my Tully shields right next to the right of them to protect them from any charge. And I just went and took the objective. I let him have the objective on the far right. I didn't even bother contesting it. And I sat there scoring 2 points to 1 point. He realized it pretty quickly and started attacking. But with my ability to constantly heal, I was able to kill him faster than he was able to kill me. And I think I killed three of his units, and he backed off and took the two corpse piles. So he was scoring 3 points around to my two. But by then, I had a lead high enough that all I had to do was sit there and wait till the last round and kind of stay away from him. And the score ended up being 10-9, but, you know, I just kind of sat there the last round because I knew I would get to 10. And overall, it was a great trip. We'd definitely come back and play in Indy again. We do appreciate you having us out there. Everybody we played was good. So we appreciate it. I think that's all I got.
And, yeah, we definitely appreciate you coming out, Craig. You and Ryan and it's John, right, was the other gentleman that came down with you?
Jake,
I'm sorry. I'm so bad with names. I'm sorry. I know what he looks like. Yeah, you guys were a real pleasure. So definitely anytime. And if we can find the time and make something happen to kind of road trip out to you guys to support your local scene as well, we'd love to do it. So
Go ahead. We are looking to do a tournament locally here at Mulkey's Restaurant on February 23rd. The Sunday of that weekend. So you guys are more than welcome to join us.
Yeah, and Marty's
in Moline, Illinois,
helping out with that one as well, right?
Right.
And I should be there,
talk to him today. Perfect. Should be a good time.
Okay. So I guess I'll get started. I obviously also had two lists. I ended up running the same list the entire time, and I don't want to say that the Yarwick list was a decoy, but I wasn't really sure under what circumstance I would pull it out. Now, if I had honestly played John Hurley's list with two Tully Cav, I probably would have deployed the Yarwick list because it's kind of designed to hurt you for attacking me, but... The primary list is a Jon Snow list. It's got Jon Snow in a unit of veterans, like everybody else. Imagine the surprise there. So obviously that comes with Ghost. And then I run two units of Flaydmen, and then I run a unit of Trackers. And the NCUs are Bowen Marsh and Amond. So in some ways it's pretty standard Night's Watch, but the two Flaydmen is a little bit different, and No Sworn Brothers is also kind of different. The Yarwick list that I had as my backup list was three units of veterans, two units of trackers, Yarwick, and then Amon. And the general concept behind that list is Yarwick has maybe the most offensive cards out of any commander. So the fact that the vet stat line goes 8-7-6, they don't really care too much about starting to lose ranks. They've got counterattack, which we'll get into counterattack later because they came up huge in one of my games. And then being able to give them critical blows, rerolling any attack dice, or vicious or sundering with precision, it kind of gives them a little bit of punch behind their pretty vanilla stat line. They do hit on threes, but yeah, being able to give them some of those keywords definitely helps. And then the trackers are basically there to proc vulnerable tokens for the veterans. And then they're able to shoot into the combat pretty safely because of the veterans' morale of 5. And they can kind of finish off anything that the veterans can't deal with. So it is a good list, and I do like it. But I just stuck with the hot hand of Jon Snow. So I actually drew a Stark army round 1 in Clash of Kings. I deployed the two Flaydmen list. because it's Clash of Kings. Like everybody's mentioned, you're coming on. If you lose your cavalry, they're pretty much able to charge right away. Just a second.
That sounds like a cavalry charge.
Yeah, that's the cavalry charge, all right.
That's so definitely what my work
they're able to
like.
Come in and they're able to come in and charge right away. Cavalry has a very big advantage in that scenario because generally you're fighting for tokens and they can make it onto the board and get a charge straight away, which is huge, especially when they're flayed men and they deal out a panic token when they charge. So what my opponent did was he actually threw me off a little bit. Because I moved Jon Snow up, and I wanted to get Jon Snow onto the center, but he was facing Roderick Greataxes. So the list I was up against was a Roderick list, and I'm doing my best to remember it, but I'm pretty sure it was Roderick and a unit of Greataxes, and then another unit of Greataxes with Brandon Hodor, and then it was Stark Sworn Swords with Dario, Stark Sworn Swords with Sirio, and then another unit of regular Stark Sworn Swords, and then Sansa Arya. So he actually had Sudden Charge in his hand, but he needed a 5 to make it to Jon Snow, and I didn't think that he would risk that, but he did. And then he made the charge, and he played Winter is Coming, so he shut off counterattacks and Jon's ability to heal any damage that I took. And I ended up taking 4 hits from him, and it was actually really, really... really lucky that I had an It Shall Not End Until My Death in my hand, because when he did the follow-up attack, Roderick can make you vulnerable, and then he's got the 8 attack dice hitting on 2s with rerolls, so what happened to you, Craig, wouldn't have happened probably if you had Roderick. You know, he did roll those 3
right.
ones, but he was able to reroll them with Roderick. Seems a little bit redundant, but it actually kind of matters. So he stuck 8 wounds on me just like that, and he would have wiped out John's unit and kind of stuck me back for a round because he had already activated, but luckily I had It Shall Not End Until My Death. I was able to keep John alive, then I was able to remove his activation token and swing into those great axes, and then when I took my next round in activation, I was able to finish Roderick's unit off, which really kind of tilted the game from the beginning. He had me, honestly, he had me from the get-go. I was like, this is going to be a bad game, but it just worked out that I had that in my hand. And I was able to overcome that. And then from there, just his army didn't really have an answer for the flayed men. So an army with a 4-plus defensive save and just average morale of 6 isn't going to be standing up to a flayed men charge very well. And with the ranger trackers dishing out a vulnerable token and then the flayed men providing their own panic token with vicious, it's a really, really, really nasty charge. Arguably better than Lance Cavalry against things that have a 4-plus armor save if you've got the ability to dish out those tokens. And then I think Flayed Men also synergize really well with the Night's Watch deck anyway, because you've got Watcher on the Wall, and Flayed Men can effectively march 10 inches and then do their activation. So they've got a really, really deep threat range to Alpha Strike other Flayed Men or other Cavalry units. And then additionally, Jon Snow's card for the Watch can give them +2 movement when they activate. So they can really, really, really fly across the board, and they're hitting you when you think that you're safe, and that's just always going to be bad business. But I was able to pull the win out of that one. He did kill the Flayed Men, both units of Flayed Men won, and that game ended at 10-6. And then my next round, which was Feast for Crows, I drew another Great Axe Heavy Stark list. This was an all Umber list. He had Great John Umber in a unit of Sworn Shields, Umber Great Axes with Brandon Hodor, Umber Great Axes with an Umber Champion, Sworn Swords with Rickon and Osha, Sworn Swords just vanilla, and I want to say his NCUs might have been Sansa and Arya as well, but possibly maybe I can't remember. I know that Sansa was in the list, but I can't remember who the other NCU was. So in that game, he deployed Great John over on one flank, and I answered that with Ghost, and then I answered it with the Flayed Men. Once he committed a second unit over to that flank, I put the entire rest of my army off to the left flank, and my first thing that I did was march the rest of my troops over, and I abandoned the entire flank that had Greg John Umber in it because he was so slow in those sworn shields. I was like, he's going to get on this objective token, and that's fine. His army's kind of going to be split up, and then I'm going to be able to do what I need to do over here on this flank and get John on the objective, and we should be okay. And in that game, the big thing that broke that game open was I was able to play For the Watch on Ghost and give him movement 8, and I was able to wipe out Summer, who was sitting right next to Brain and Hodor. Well, instead of retreating behind his line, I actually put Ghost in a spot where the Great Axes could charge me because I had It Shall Not End Until My Death in my hand, and I wanted to pin that unit of Great Axes, and I was hoping he would go for Ghost. And he did go for Ghost, and he did kill him, and I played that card. Well, at that point, I was able to remove his activation token, and then I had Sword in the Darkness in my hand, and I controlled the swords. So Ghost was able to chomp into that Great Axe unit and do 4 wounds, and then made him fail his panic test. And then from there, it was really simple for the trackers to just move up and shoot and wipe that unit of Great Axes out. And then from there, I was able to double charge the other unit of Great Axes with Flayed Men. And once the Great Axes were dead, I ended up killing everything but Great John Umber. And I won that game 11-6. And then my last round, I drew Ryan, who had an all-cavalry Lannister army. All cavalry. It was 3 units of Knights of Castle Rock, a unit of Flayed Men, Pycelle, and Tyrion NCU, and it was commanded by the High Sparrow. And this game was actually really, really, really tough. He got an alpha strike on Jon Snow with the Flayed Men. And the big thing that broke that game open was counterattacks, which I alluded to the fact that I would talk about those. I had placed the Horn That Wakes the Sleeper on Jon Snow's unit because I controlled the letter. And I had Shield of the Realms of Men in hand, but you can't play Shield of the Realms of Men and call counterattacks in the same turn. But what you can do is if you control the money bag as well, which I did, you can swap Shield Horn That Wakes the Sleeper with Shield of the Realms of Men and then go ahead and block those D3 hits, and then you can call counterattack as well. Well, that's exactly what I needed because I was able to block the D3 hits, and then I defended maybe 4 of them. And when he rolled his defensive save, he failed 3. So that took the Flayed Men down to 9 wounds. And at that point, I felt comfortable sending my Flayed Men into his flank with the vulnerable token, and I was able to wipe out his Flayed Men. And then kind of after that, once his Flayed Men were gone, I was a little bit more comfortable because it was Dance with Dragons, and I had removed his unit that had Vicious. And then I was able to kind of slowly run around the board, and we played a little bit of the Mexican standoff, you know, my cavalry and his, and I had to eat some charges from those knights, which I never really like to do, but the MVP ended up being the trackers because they're so fast. I was actually charging them into combat and hitting his Knights of Castle Rock, not expecting to really do any damage, but just to pin them down and keep them from charging me. So I was essentially able to tie his knights up for the rest of the game, and I was able to keep Jon Snow scoring on that objective, and I won that one. I think that was the one I won 11-6. The previous game I won 12-5. So I had a 10, 11, and a 12 in victory points, and I just edged Craig out by 1. He finished with 32, and I finished with 33. So we didn't really have time to play 4 rounds because the people that had come out of town needed to kind of get on the road. So unfortunately, Craig and I didn't get to do the big showdown of the undefeated guys, but I'm sure I'll play him again at some point. But it was a really fun tournament, and we saw some pretty interesting lists and some pretty interesting things. So it's definitely something to keep in mind. But so that's it from my perspective. And I think at this point we're going to kind of move on to everybody's thoughts on this next point, which is the lack of Varys. I don't think that Varus ever saw the table. I think he was maybe in one list, but I don't think he ever saw the table. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? Anybody want to say anything about that?
Just the timing effect change for him. I think it makes him, that's the bigger nerf than the increase in the points, because you don't know what zone somebody's going to claim. And even bigger than that, a lot of the time, you don't know if they're going to play a replacement effect. I know, Brett, you and I play a lot, and you used to take Varus specifically to try and stop sudden charge, because I would have to declare whether I was doing sudden charge when I claimed a zone, and then you could use Varus to stop it, and you could just hold back a couple of his tokens, where now you can't do that because you don't know whether the person's going to play sudden charge or not. And more important, if you try to use Varus and say, okay, I'm going to block your zone effect this activation, I don't need to play sudden charge out of my hand. I can just hold on to it until later. So I think his utility is highly limited now, except to stop certain NCUs where you know that their inherent influence is really powerful and you know you need to stop it, then Varus may have a place, like Walder or even Cersei. You know that when they get played, you want to stop their influence. And so you could still use him for that purpose, but there's other ways to fight those NCUs that are cheaper. And so I just don't see much of a reason to take him anymore.
I've talked about it before on here. I think Varus's biggest strength before, obviously he was amazing, but he was able to stop an entire activation of an opponent. I think that was the single biggest strength, and that's completely gone now. You are incapable of stopping an activation if your opponent chooses. However, that being said, if he was 5 points, I think I'd still take him in like a lot of lists. So I'm definitely not looking to take him a whole lot now, but 5 points, I'd pay for it still.
If he was the same as he was before.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that would be balanced. If they had kept him with the same ability, if they hadn't changed his ability at all, and they had put him at 5 points, he would still be usable at 5 points, and people would still take him. But with the combination of the points increase and nerfing his ability, I just don't see how he's worth it anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
I'm totally agreeing. At 5 points, if he could still block zone replacement, and I know sudden charge is kind of the default. That's the one we go to. It's not just sudden charge. It's the Gregor card, Orders to Destroy, which is also a
right.
sudden charge card, and it's
yeah.
the Endless Horde. And so I'm sure there's others, but really the zone replacement kind of effects are usually huge, and those are the cards that you really wanted to stop. And I always felt like, while Varus was a little bit powerful, so are those cards. And I felt like they kind of needed to be checked. And it's a lot harder to check those cards now. But having said that, I don't think he's totally unusable. He can still kind of stop predictable things. Like when great actors charge you at the top of the round and they're going first, they're obviously going to go for the swords to try to finish you off before they activate, so he would still be able to stop that. Obviously, a Night's Watch player with Aemon, you know, if he just brought Jon's unit back to life, they're clearly going to go for the money bags, so you can kind of still block that, but he's just, I don't see how he's 5 points at this point. What do you think about it, Craig?
The only reason I could see using him as he currently sits is if Frey becomes incredibly popular and everyone starts running Frey to shut down Cavaliers and great axes and stuff like that. Because if you've got a big charge, I mean, it's obvious I have to charge you to win the game. I've got my Cavaliers set up to do it. You roll their Frey me, I lose the game. But if you can cancel that with Varus, you know. But other than that, I don't really see a reason to bring him anymore.
Yeah, for Frey, I have Littlefinger in one of my lists because the way I figure it is, you know, he may be able to do a thing when my opponent is going first, but you know, if I'm going first, I'm just going to put Littlefinger on the crown. I'm going to use it for something else I want and block him and still get some utility beyond the base effect of the crown. So that was kind of my plan for dealing with him if I encountered him, rather than selling out to Varus.
And it's cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. And then he has his effect, I think, is underrated by a lot of people. That ability to replace one's own effect with another and double up has come in handy so often for me. You know, double healing when you need to by taking the bags twice. Against free folk, I've actually double crowned people and nuked two units in one round with that. It's incredibly useful and adds a lot of flexibility to your offensive game. In some ways, and you know, taking the sword, nobody lets you do the sword effect twice, though.
not anymore.
You know, but he has a lot of flexibility that you don't get with, you know, Varus is purely defensive, and Littlefinger can be played both ways. So he's
yeah,
great.
You used him really well against me.
What do you think about it, Jose? You got anything to add to Varus?
Well, I mean, I didn't go to the tournament, but I think it's interesting that he didn't hit the table. Because I thought he would still be used. I mean, granted, there was only one tournament, but I thought he would still be, you know, a viable character, just in the sense of like you just have to do a little more, I guess, predicting, and then just kind of like I mentioned before on the show, like the intimidation factor, like. You know, the other player thinking like, okay, they have Varus, like this, I can get things shut off. Like, cause I've done things that I normally wouldn't do just because someone has Varus. So like, I don't know. I thought he would still be taken. So I just think it's interesting that he wasn't. Obviously I understand why, you know, you guys brought up very good points, but, so it's just interesting is all. I guess we'll see, you know, at Adepticon, if anyone throws him in the list or not, and at the table.
I think if you have five points to spend on a neutral NCU, that you're going to take Walder, because you can actually do a lot of the same things that you can do with Varus in terms of blunting what the other guy is doing. Because, you know, if usually a lot of the effects that you're worried about blocking may be tied to a unit in that particular situation. I think I don't remember whether it's Craig or Brett who were talking about shutting down the abilities of a unit. If you shut down the abilities of a unit of Tele-Cavaliers, you don't care so much if they're going to sudden charge you, because they're not going to hurt you that bad. And so whereas Varus could stop the playing of the sudden charge, Walder kind of gets you to the same place by making you not care whether they sudden charge, because they're not really going to hurt you. And that effect is, you know, it's something that's harder to, it's a more lasting effect than just one blocking one NCU effect or whatever it may be. So I think if I had 5 points, I'm probably just going to take Walder instead of Varus anyway.
You can even use him to snipe wolves if you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or soon to be bears.
Yeah,
it makes them worth a point.
Hey, leave my bears alone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Is that over the course of a game, you could just snipe the same, you know, you snipe the same wolf twice, dead wolf.
Yeah.
I'm worried about what happened. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, Craig, I don't know if you noticed in our game, I think I used all three of Eddard's tokens on my wolves, because you would do one wound to them with your outriders, and because I had your outriders tied up. But I knew if I left that one wound there, you would Walder and get that free victory point. So I was wasting my Eddard tokens just to make sure that they, you know, would get back to their 2 health, so you couldn't just, you know, one turn kill with a Walder influence.
I wouldn't say you wasted them because I took, I think, four attacks, so four activations on that same wolf, and he was still there laughing at me at the end of the game with no wounds on him.
Yeah. Yeah, the wolves are the only things in my list that didn't die.
Yeah. All I had to do was kill the wolf at the end. I never would have had to do that crazy charge, and I still couldn't do it with eight dice. Well, I noticed.
Yeah.
So what about the fact that at this event now, simultaneously with our event, they had the Las Vegas Open, and the Las Vegas Open was primarily Lannister, but our event was primarily Stark. So we had eight Stark players. Do you guys feel like Starks around Indy and maybe Lannisters just in general? Do you think Starks and Lannisters are the two best houses? They just got their full updates. Do you think they're the two strongest right now?
I do, yeah. And coming at it like in a not complaining aspect, but yeah, it definitely feels like they have a lot more tools in their box than everyone else, and that matters significantly when you need to be versatile in a game. They, like Starks, for instance, can do, and we talked about it when we talked about Starks, they can basically run any type of list they feel like. They can be offensive, they can be defensive, they can be controlling, they can be incredibly fast. It's hard to say that an army is not really good when they just have so much that they can do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know that I think Lannisters are the strongest. I don't know that I put them over Night's Watch. I think that even with some of the changes to Night's Watch and weakening some of the things that they can do, they still have some incredible tools at their disposal. I think that trackers are way underrated by lots of people. That ability to hand out the vulnerable token is huge. The mobility that they bring to the table in terms of going after objectives and the ability to go after things like dogs in a Stark list and take them down. I think trackers are great. And, you know, Jon Snow has always been strong, and he hasn't gotten any weaker. You know, obviously, if you put him in a unit of Sworn Brothers, the cost goes up a little bit. But most people put him in vets anyway. And in objective-based scenarios, which most of the scenarios out there that you would see in a tournament revolve around objectives, and they also give an additional point for commander control of objectives, I think Night's Watch still, I put them ahead of Lannister.
Well, I was going to say too, I think, you know, apart from everything we've already said on the show, and you guys made also very good points too, but I also was going to say that I think sometimes it's even just the fact of like comfortability. Like, you know, someone may have, for example, someone may have Targaryens, but they've been playing Lannister since the game came out. And, you know, for a tournament, they're going to use what they're most comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it'll be, as new armies get released, and, you know, it takes a while for, for me at least, but I'm sure if a lot of people feel the same way, it takes a while for you to kind of like get the groove, play them correctly, you know, kind of, and then adding more tools to the box as more units come out, more MTUs and whatever else. Like, for example, right now I'm playing Baratheons, but, you know, every time a tournament comes up, I was constantly going back to Starks because I have so many Starks, and I've been using Starks since the game first came out. So I think sometimes that's even part of the reason why you see so many Starks and Lannisters, on top of everything else you guys have mentioned as well, too, so.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's a really valid point because I've been playing Starks since the game came out, and I'm also somebody who paints, and I want to play with painted models. And
that too.
You make a huge commitment to your army when you paint it, and, you know, getting into a new army and painting that army takes a lot of time. And so if you already have a whole bunch of Starks like I do, that's what you're going to use. And that's kind of what I'm going to stick with. Unless I sit down and paint a usable, 50, 60 points that I can mix and match something else. I'm going to be playing Starks for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, exactly. That's another huge point too. So I didn't even think of that, but that's very true. I mean, I paint everything I have. Same thing. And then every time I get a new army, I'm excited to play it. But sometimes it's the same. Like you said, I've had my whole Stark army painted, and I just kind of sometimes really just see a whole painted army on the table.
Yeah.
And to piggyback onto that, the comfort level and everything, most of those people that are at the top of these tournaments have been playing since the game came out, and there were only two options when the game came out, so you're still going to see them at the top.
There was three.
Neutrals.
They were neutral.
I've been playing them since day one.
Okay, stand corrected. There's two and a half.
Okay, I'll take that.
But since we mentioned the Las Vegas Open, the lists were shared online, and it was very interesting because neutrals did well there. And then the other thing about it was that the Lannister lists that were in there, in some respects, were very similar to the list that I saw being run when the game first came out, with a lot of Lannister supremacy. When the game first came out, it was kind of this whole Lannister supremacy Cersei thing going on, that seemed to be dominating, at least initially, and the Las Vegas Open lists are kind of going back to that. It was kind of interesting to see.
I actually think Lannister supremacy's come around full circle again because of the change to morale. So the downside of playing Lannister supremacy with Cersei was you get a -2, maybe a -4, but the counter to supremacy was what you and Dave seem to run, which is something like with Stalwart and high morale. But now with the change to panic, you only have to get them to fail by one, and then they're going to take 2 to 4 wounds. And with the easy I'm sure you saw that there was a Roose Bolton. I'm high on Roose Bolton right now. Panic tokens, I think, are huge in this game. So they're running Roose Bolton with Cersei and Lannister supremacy. So you've got easy access to panic tokens. And then you're making them fail, and then you're making them re-roll the D3. I see it as 3 to 4 wounds for every failed panic check. And it's pretty easy to do with a panic token, honestly, having played men with just vicious. So
I want to jump in on that real quick. I think I've found it kind of difficult. Maybe Lannisters have an easier time, but Roose Bolton, unless you're not using those cards, you're not using those panic tokens to make them re-roll panic. You've got 6 cards plus some if you recycle with the 4 cards you can recycle that you're trying to expend panic tokens on.
I would honestly only use the one that
Calculated Cruelty.
Flayedman has no secrets, and Calculated Cruelty are probably the only two of his cards I would use. And I would save the panic tokens to use those cards. But generally, if I was playing Roose, I would be after the panic tokens more so than the cards.
Yeah,
and a Lannister,
especially when you have vicious units these days. So to stack with those panic tokens. But to go back about talking about Lannister supremacy going full circle, when the game first started, one of the first tournaments that I played in, after having played just a little bit, my response to seeing Cersei in all of these games with Lannister supremacy was to run a Blackfish list. And part of it was because of Stalwart, but the other part of it was because of an amazing card, which is Tully Valor, where you automatically pass your panic test when somebody attacks you. And when you're getting hit by somebody who's vicious and lays a panic token, to be able to say, I don't care, I'm passing my test regardless of how bad you make it, is a pretty big deal. And so that was what I was doing, is I was really counting on that card a lot. And so this tournament, guess what? I was back to doing the Blackfish, and I hadn't run him in months. But with the way that Lannister supremacy and panic has kind of come back, or the concern about that, I ended up running him.
So. And it paid off. So God
bless.
It did,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I think he might be the best commander the Starks have at this point.
Yeah,
with the current panic rules.
Yeah.
And now that they dropped Tully Cavaliers, you can actually build a viable list that's not just Sworn Shields.
Yeah, but the other thing is that during my games, they're inspiring rule was huge as well, because you keep you're near the sworn shields and they have a +3 to their panic test, which is pretty amazing.
Right.
So they're effective. They're effective morale 3, which is and then if you are in a really bad spot, you can use Holy Valor for the other stuff, or Direwolf's Fervor, and so you have a fairly resistant list to panic effects. So I absolutely think that in that, taking that aspect of the meta into account, I think Blackfish is really good today.
I hope everybody who talked badly about Embolden is biting their tongues right now. Embolden is an amazing ability. You have to remember it, but it's amazing. Like, seriously. Dave always says morale is an extension on your defense, and I can't agree anymore, because when my vets die, they don't die from getting beat on. They die from panic. So
right.
If I had a way to boost their morale, I'd be happy. I mean, a 5 is pretty good, but you still fail pretty often, and it's pretty punishing. So I think real quick, we want to touch on Clash of Kings, and especially the guys who just played in a tournament. I think we all pretty much kind of implied or touched on our lists were chosen simply because of that scenario. How do you guys feel about it as a competitive scenario? I know at Adepticon, currently it's slated to be in place of Fire and Blood, but what do you guys think? Personally, I would prefer probably Fire and Blood, but what do you think about Clash of Kings? It was the meta changer before, because that was the list you brought Double Flayedmen and tried to hold the center. Do you think it's changing the meta again to people where it's cavalry or bust in that scenario?
I kind of do. And, you know, just because I think that what we talked about, that ability to come in, I don't think it necessarily needs to be all cavalry. I think that, like, the list I brought did have one unit that was designed infantry unit, because you could get 3 ranks that was highly defensive, and you would get them with your field commander. And that's the other thing, is that most cavalry can't contain your commander for most armies. So you kind of, if you want to be racking up those double points, you need an infantry field commander. But yeah, just get an infantry field commander and then sell out to cavalry so that you can try to knock. That's your best chance to kind of knock people off the other objective. If you got 2 armies, each with a defensive infantry unit sitting one place or the other, the ability to come back in and charge and have the impetus of that charge gives you the ability to kind of control the other objective or keep the other guy off of it. So, yeah, I think it's all about cavalry.
I think I'm on the same boat as Brett with Fire and Blood, even though it's kind of just a slugfest, you just try to murder each other as quick as possible. Clash of Kings absolutely, like, hamstrings people into wanting to only bring cavalry. So it's a little weird to have a scenario that they're like, hey, just bring the 1 unit, 2 units in your army that you can bring. That doesn't really help units be brought at all. And it gives a clear advantage to one specific thing.
The other thing I want to add really quick before Dave goes, my other concern with that scenario is like an activation spam list, because it doesn't count as your activation when you come on, and then you get to activate them later. So it's effectively, if you've got a list that's like free folk with 11 or 10 combat units or 11 combat units and then 2 NCUs, that's effectively 22 activations that they're having, because 1 to drop the unit, 1 to activate the unit. And I'm not calling anybody out or saying it, but I have heard about issues with free folk players stalling at tournaments, and that is like the perfect scenario to go score 1 or 2 points before your opponent can push you and then stall, because you've got effectively 22 drops. And if you're pausing to think where you want this unit and you're measuring it out to make sure you can get them, there's entirely way too much opportunity to stall if you've got 11 units that you're bringing in.
That's a really good point.
And even if it's not being used to stall that activation, Brett, you actually reminded me, we played a prep game a couple weeks back, Clash Kings, and I had an activation advantage on you. And if nothing else, being able to do that, to kind of hesitate and use that activation advantage, it allows you to multiply that advantage so that all your stuff is going at the end of the round and your opponent doesn't get to respond to it. I think I had three units taking actions when you were done, even though I only had one more activation than you. It kind of throws things off. It plays longer. And it magnifies the activation advantage, so I'm not a fan as it's currently set up.
Ailes took six straight, effectively six straight turns of me just watching in it. It's fine. I mean, it's not something that's going to frustrate me, but it's kind of something that can maybe leave a little bit of a bad taste, which you never want at a tournament. If somebody's literally sitting and watching their opponent take 12 turns to their just 12 in a row with them having no action, it's very disengaging, and it's just not my favorite scenario, but that's just my take on it. So
I actually love the scenario, but I love it, but it's a lot of fun to play at the game store on a Thursday night or whatever, but like you guys said, I've had games where no one was stalling and they'd go for 3 hours just because of the constant redeploying and everything else. It is a great scenario, but it is terrible for competitive play and should not be in a tournament.
Agreed.
In my opinion.
You got anything to add to it?
I was going to say I'm kind of in the same boat as everyone. I was just going to kind of go over a couple ideas I thought might help fix it. They might not be the end-all be-all of fixing the scenario, but possibly even making the deployment only 6 inches, so that way it's harder to jump up on the objectives first turn, and or changing it back to just be the boxes, you know, the corner deployments, so that way the middle objective isn't obtainable right away. So... And I just feel like when it had the corner deployments, it was just something different that you didn't encounter with the other missions. It gave an element of more deployments rather than everything just being 6 or 12. If you put a bog or a course pile or something underneath the middle objective back with the corner deployments, it wasn't very easy for cavalry to get on it right away. So I think small changes like that, they would have to be tested to be sure if how much impact they would do. But I haven't lost all hope for Clash for, you know, being competitive. But as is, it needs to change at least a little bit.
Yeah, as I agree with everything that's been said. And the other thing I wanted to add is that if you're looking at scenarios to include in a competitive environment, one of the things that I like about Fire and Blood is that it's not based on controlling objectives. And so it makes you play a little bit differently than the other game modes, and to think about how to construct your army. And it can kind of make for a more free-flowing game when you're actually playing, because you're not tied to these artificial points on the board. It allows you to ebb and flow, pull back when necessary. And I really like that game mode. I do think that they should dial it back a little bit. I wasn't necessarily a fan of the rule where the marked units get an additional 2 attack dice. That makes it maybe a little bit too bloody and quick. But I like the idea of a battle that's more of just a straight up fight about killing stuff than controlling objectives.
I was going to say, to your point about giving the units plus two attack, I actually kind of like that change because I feel like it makes you think twice on who to mark now. Because before it was always, I don't know, I feel like I guess not think twice, but like you always want to mark the weakest units, I guess, right? But now it provides more of a challenge for the weaker units to be taken out.
Sometimes their weakest unit is a really hard hitting unit, and you might not want to do that.
Yeah, if I have two units of Tully Cav and two units of Great Axes, what are you going to mark?
Tully Cav and Walder Frey.
Yeah. So, but seriously, I mean, that's the thing is that for that, you know, with the plus two dice, I'm going to be like every unit I'm taking in this army is going to punish you if you put, if you give it two more attacks. So, yeah, so that's, you know, I would build a list to take advantage of that, but I'm not necessarily a fan of it.
All right. So
the choice
think,
is that between
kinda...
Clash of Kings.
What was that?
I said, but if your choice is between that and Clash of Kings, which do you go with?
Oh,
yeah,
Fire
that one's
and
a lot more tournament friendly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fire and Blood for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think Clash is definitely not like a lost cause. I think just a couple of small changes and it will be right up there with a lot of the other, you know, great tournament missions. Fire and Blood, though, between the two, I think is definitely the better of the options right now. I think that kind of concludes most of all of our topics. Craig, if you want to give that shout out one more time for the tournament, you'll let them know where it's at, you know, point costs and all the, you know, all the fun details.
Yeah, it is going to be Sunday, February 23rd at Mulkey's Restaurant in Moline, Illinois, right on the Mississippi River. And it's going to be hosted by the same guy who's doing Adepticon. And it's going to be 40 points, just like most other tournaments. I think we're going to follow the same rules that Adepticon follows. And it's actually at a restaurant, so the food will be good and should be a good time. A one-day tournament. $10 entry, I believe.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to having you. Playing you again.
I have yet to play you.
Oh, we're going to have to make that happen.
I played the other two.
Well, we have to make it happen.
For those that haven't yet, make sure you like our page. As soon as we get 150 likes, which I believe we're only about 11 away, we're going to give out a unit box to a random, a random person that's liked the page. So share it out and try to get a couple more likes on there. And then we'll be continuing to give out a bunch of, you know, prizes as we progress. But, thank you all for tuning in. Please remember to share the show out. Give it a like. This is currently the best way you can support us. It helps a ton, you know, the word of mouth. We're still relatively new. So, word of mouth is definitely going to be the best way to let people know that we're, you know, doing this show. We do it every week on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Again, I apologize for my voice. I'm pretty sick, but I should be good by next week where we'll be talking about the Free Folk and how they stack up with 1.5. And I believe our guest for that week is going to actually be Chase from On the Table Gaming. So please be sure to check that one out. Thank you all so much for listening. Small council is dismissed.